avoid it or push things off or do different things. Yeah. And so, you know, basically since Carter, you know, the Democratic Party has been trying to pass, you know, really big, substantial, you know, pro-union kind of actual, you know, law and reform.
Right.
And so, you know, we've talked about it a bunch on this show, but, you know, the PRO Act is kind of
yes.
the gateway to helping these unions in different scenarios actually see some sort of success. Because, you know, like I mentioned, even if they had voted in the affirmative, it might not have led to anything for quite some time.
Right, it could have taken years for that contract to be negotiated.
Yeah. So it's really important to, you know, we've talked about it on the show. You know, you can obviously go to laborradio.org and listen to those, or kind of do some research on your own and kind of make sure that you're aware and your senator's aware and your congressman or congresswoman are aware that, you know, this is a really important piece of legislation that needs to be talked about more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is priority number one for the labor movement, for unions, for working people in general, and it should be for the Democratic Party right now, is to pass the PRO Act. I mean, there are definitely steps that need to be taken after that, which we will get into in next month's episode, but you know, right now, passing the PRO Act and reshaping it was, we are basically in a moment where labor law has been hammered into place by, you know, employers and by business owners and the Chamber of Commerce and things like that for the last 40 years. And so it is shaped to fit their needs away from the needs of working people. So the passing the PRO Act is going to be the first step in kind of reshaping those laws and having creating a more even playing field for working people to, in fact, assert their needs and their demands and their rights and, you know, the right to collectively bargain, which is what is laid out in the NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act. It is the stated purpose of our government, because of that act, to allow for the ability for workers to organize. And right now, that ability is highly diminished because of laws that have been reshaped by those corporations. Mm-hmm. So it is time to do something big and pass the PRO Act in order to help, you know, as I just said, reshape and even the playing field for working people. So thank you so much for joining us. Again, I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Have a great rest of your day.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. We're very honored to have Emily Newman here tonight with the American Humanist Association. She is the education coordinator, and we're going to be talking about the work that the American Humanist Association does in the prison. Emily, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you very much. It's really an honor having you here. First of all, can you tell us what is the American Humanist Association?
Sure. The American Humanist Association, often referred to as AHA, is an educational nonprofit founded in 1941. We advance humanism as a life stance that, without theism or other supernatural beliefs, affirms the ability and responsibility of human beings to lead personal lives of ethical fulfillment that aspire to the greater good. So we do this through legal, legislative, and grassroots efforts to defend civil liberties, secular governance, scientific integrity, and social justice.
Oh, great. So you promote humanist values that are free of religion. Why is it important to have an organization like that in today's society?
Our organization is very important because, unfortunately, too much of the country and other countries as well still are stuck in this assumption that you need God to be good and that you need religious dogma in order to have morals and ethics. But we worry that that focus on a supernatural or afterlife or deity takes away the prime focus of how we all relate to each other and connect to our planet and just try to be better people for the sake of making our lives better and making the lives of others better. And so, you know, we certainly are not trying to take away someone's religion or make them feel bad about their beliefs, but we don't want those beliefs to be controlling a government that impacts everybody. And we don't want those harmful assumptions to, you know, hurt folks who are questioning their beliefs or who strive to be good people in their day-to-day life by just understanding what it means to connect and relate to others and knowing that, you know, ethics does not need an, you know, unclear outside entity. It really comes from within.
Thank you. And as we know, the number of Americans who are classified as others, as nuns, as people who don't identify with a religious tradition is increasing year after year in this country. And, you know, I'm just wondering if we can talk about the work that the American Humanist Association does to kind of combat that trend within the prisons, where the assumption is that if you need some kind of services, you go to religious organizations first.
Absolutely. And I love how you mentioned about the growing unaffiliated from religion population and the different labels, because that is something that we see both inside and outside of prisons. Many of the people that are incarcerated who write to us have not even fully decided if they are a humanist, but they're excited to learn. They're questioning the religion they were brought up in or questioning how much religion is in the facility and like determining the access to privileges and groups that their peers get. Or, you know, because they've got a bit more time to read the different kinds of philosophy and or educate themselves on science, they're just intrigued by wanting to know more about humanist values. I've often gotten people also just being like, oh, my friend got this magazine from you. I'd love to be able to get that magazine as well and, you know, find out about your courses and what else you provide. So there's little networks happening within the facility amongst the individuals that we'd love to also have on the supported by facilities, and that, but that will be kind of a bigger advocacy step. So as you mentioned, you know, asked about how our organization serves incarcerated people, we provide a discounted membership rate, which we allow folks to pay with check, money order, or stamps, knowing that their finances are often limited and also at the control of their facility. We have a pen pal program to connect those incarcerated with the outside humanist movement. And we allow them to write for our publications. We have an Inside the Walls column where they can talk about some of the struggles that they have in the facility, as well as their journey to humanism. And as they gather multiple people at a facility, I then am able to support them in developing a prison chapter so they can have discussions on publications and issues, celebrate secular holidays, just get to know each other, and have that same access to a peer group as religious groups, or sometimes there are helping self-help or help support groups. So humanism can fall into either of those categories depending on the facility's rules. And then lastly, if there are any church-state separation violations, then we get our legal team in to see if how we can support them and educate the facility sometimes about, you know, just awareness of the needs of non-religious incarcerated folks.
So I'm just wondering if you can comment on what is the relationship between the AHA and, you know, chaplains and religious organizations within penal institutions. Is it Is it a filial relationship? Is it antagonistic? Is it fairly easy to set up an AHA chapter within an institution?
So our current work has been primarily with the incarcerated individuals and finding out their needs and interests, and then learning from them how to best communicate with the facility. So for example, if an individual is unable to receive a donated book from us, which actually just happened recently, they'll let me know how I can write to the facility chaplain or connect with staff in order to be able to make that connection. Sometimes I need to kind of explain what the materials are to the chaplain, explain why this is being requested by the individual at their institution. And I've never had an issue with those communications. I'm pretty clear, especially because we don't provide anti-religious material. It's very much on the positive, getting to know humanism and science and understanding evolution. I will say, however, that I have had to put some work at times into making sure that the book got to the individual. There are, you know, a lot of little rules about the way that things are labeled and who they accept books from. So it does take some determination on our side and follow up to make sure that, you know, it happened. We do have some humanist chaplains at prisons. It's a growing field, but the Humanist Society, which is our endorsing body, it's an adjunct organization to the AHA. They endorse celebrants, chaplains, invocators, lay leaders. They have been accepted by the Federal Prison Bureau as an endorsing body, and we would love to be able to get more chaplains, more humanist chaplains in facilities, similar to how we have them at universities and hospitals and hospices, and working on getting them into police stations and military, because, you know, the support that religious chaplains provide to individuals is also needed on a humanist secular side. We think that it is very troubling when a chaplain who especially is a bit more on the fundamentalist side believes that they can serve anybody from any faith and doesn't actually listen to the individual they're trying to help. And we do have, I've seen many religious chaplains of different denominations who are very humanistic in their work. They're, you know, strong with interfaith. They understand, have a good background in different faiths, so they're able to support individuals without proselytizing, and that's always appreciated. They're also the kind of people who, if they don't know the right thing to say or the right information, they will search out. So we have even had chaplains come to the AHA saying, can you teach me a little bit more about humanism? Can you tell me what services you provide so that I can connect you to this individual in need?
Thank you. What does it take to start an AHA chapter within an institution? Are we talking about prisons, jails? What kind of spaces? And what does it take to set one up?
Sure. So to set up a group, we require that there be 5 AHA members. So that is one of the reasons that we do want to make sure that we provide information about humanism and the AHA services. And we usually provide the Humanist Manifesto up front, so people understand what this group is about and what they're, you know, kind of signing up for. I know some facilities have strict rules about what types of membership they even allow their individuals to sign up for. And then we, since on, you know, for a regular outside of prison group, I would then have an interview like phone or Zoom to get to know them. Unfortunately, I don't always have the ability to do that due to limited internet and phone access for incarcerated folks. But I do usually have a correspondence with them through email for those who have it, or snail mail, and I also give them some discussion guides and information about our printed courses that could, you know, be the development. Especially during COVID, there's been limited meeting availability. So I know, so it's been a little tough for our groups to support each other and stay connected because of the different lockdown and the spread of COVID. But in general, usually when they are meeting regularly, they'll let me know about certain projects they'd like to do, or about having speakers or volunteers come in, being able, for a while we got a lot of requests for DVDs, because those who did get access to the equipment were able to do screenings. Some of our most active chapters in prisons are working with the other groups to kind of just make sure to help with the communication amongst religious groups. I will say, when it comes to, you know, establishing the rights of a prison chapter, for the most part, it seems like as long as there are active individuals, the facility is fine with letting them, you know, do what meet the, you know, they just fill out a form. We have information if they need help filling out that form, and we've written letters explaining ourselves and the support that we give to groups, to the facilities. There have been times where the facility did reject it, and that's where we have our legal team step in to explain, you know, no, there, every individual has a right to form a group, and we have information about how humanism can be seen as a non-theistic religion, so that also kind of puts it into terms that the chaplains are able to understand.
Great, thank you so much.
It's time for the KBOO Spring Pledge Drive. Did you know KBOO is 52 years old and one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the oldest media institutions in Portland? KBOO programming focuses on local communities, artists, activists, people. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free thanks to the support we receive from our members. 80% of our funding comes from our members. You can donate today by clicking Donate in the mobile app, texting KBOO to 44-321, or you can mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. The best way is to go to kboo.fm/give. Less than 10% of listeners are members of KBOO. So won't you consider donating today at kboo.fm/give? Thank you.
Another question I have, in terms of people forming chapters and meeting for support within institutions, is there a way that volunteers can go into state and federal institutions as humanists and support groups that want to meet?
Yes, we do tend to rely on our volunteers to know the rules and requirements of facilities. If we're already in communication with a facility, we will share that with volunteers. But we're able to train volunteers in humanism and provide them educational materials so they feel prepared to be a representative at that facility and handle staff concerns. We've also been able to connect volunteers with some humanist chaplains to understand a little bit more about, you know, the institution. We've had we've noticed that facilities do tend to take a group more seriously if they have an outside representative. So we're trying to make sure that we can connect our prison chapters, or at least facilities, with a couple of AHA individuals and pen pals, with some of our local chapters and affiliates across the country. It is, you know, again, a little challenging in terms of, even outside of the pandemic, the travel, since a lot of these institutions are kind of outside of city limits, and our volunteers are often active with different projects, so being able to coordinate a visit has been a bit challenging at times. But we know how valuable those visits are to both the volunteers and the incarcerated community, because it gives them a chance to you know, further expand on discussion that they wouldn't have due to their limited population. And we've had actually some of our initial chapters in Iowa were very fortunate to have very dedicated humanist celebrants in that area who not only were able to visit, but were able to coordinate for speakers to come in. Again, it really all depends on the relationship with the facility and being clear about, you know, how to follow the rules. If I could find some consistency amongst the facilities and write a guide, I would love to do so. But the facilities do tend to be run not only by, you know, their state laws, but also by the individual staff members in charge.
Thank you. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking tonight with Emily Newman from the American Humanist Association about humanism in the prisons, and people who want to gather and affirm the fundamental dignity and worth of each other, basically free of religion. So, Emily, what kind of numbers are we talking about in terms of, like, if we look at the prisons today, do you have any idea, like, what percentage of the population might be considered non-religious?
That would be a fascinating survey that, unfortunately, I do not have yet. But I, you know, certainly know some folks who have been actively measuring the secular movement and its political activism. So they may want to also explore those in prisons and jails. I can tell you that we have probably about 300 individuals who are incarcerated and have reached out to us to become members or join our pen pal program. They often will stay in touch when initially released as well. So we extend our membership discount rate for folks. And then I would say that there are, as those individuals share their courses and their magazines, we kind of encourage folks to leave their books that we are able to donate in their library or shared spaces so that more can learn about it. So I'm sure that there are probably several hundred who I haven't directly been in contact with, or possibly, you know, hundreds that were involved before I joined the AHA staff. So kind of encouraging that growth within the system, but unfortunately I don't have clear numbers to give you at this time.
If people wanted to read a book, or maybe two books, in order to understand more about humanism and what humanism is about, what might they look for at their prison library or ask for from the outside to send in? What would be one or two good books that are kind of an introduction to humanist philosophy?
Sure. Well, we give Roy Speckhart's book, Creating Change Through Humanism, with the new membership packet. So Roy Speckhart is the current executive director of the American Humanist Association, and he actually just published another book, which we'll see if we can get that into prison as well. The second one is on justice-centered humanism. And that's also, they're both fairly short, easy to comprehend books that at least get some of the thoughts going on where else to explore. I think he also names several individuals and books for next steps. I would say too, I am a big fan of the writing of Anthony Pinn and Dale McGowan, who, and they've actually even worked together on editing some books. I think that those are great in order to not only show the philosophical side, but really get into the community aspect, because they both Anthony Pinn and Dale McGowan talk about the presence and impact of humanism within our relationships and connection to society, which I think helps give kind of a broad understanding of how humanism is a life stance.
Thank you. Dismantling white supremacy and combating racism are fundamental to understanding the tools of social change necessary in the 21st century. What does the American Humanist Association do to address issues of white supremacy?
Yeah, that is certainly something that we have been working on strengthening. We do have our social justice alliances that are helping us with various curriculum development and live events and bringing awareness to our publication of the Humanist Magazine and thehumanist.com. We're being very mindful of also widening our call for voices, getting more diverse authors to write with us and to speak during our different programs. I think one of the challenging things is even just being clear with the labels that, you know, addressing white supremacy characteristics and the culture that it creates is something that is everyone's responsibility, because it shows up in little aspects throughout our daily lives, and it should not be just associated with the stereotype of a white supremacist who is, you know, kind of out there violently attacking people of color, because by making that distinction, I think it helps bring more people into the discussion and taking responsibility for their own behavior. Because it's easy to say, oh, I'm not as bad as this person, but it takes a little bit more effort and acknowledgement to realize, oh, when I made this comment, it really hit this person in this way, or when I did this action, it, you know, caused this other action, and I need to resolve this, help us heal from it, not do this again, and you know, share my story so that I can also help other people acknowledge these issues.
Thank you. We've been talking tonight with Emily Newman from the American Humanist Association. Emily, if people are interested in writing to you, how can they reach you, by snail mail and by email?
Yes, I'd love to hear from people. So for snail mail, the office address is American Humanist Association, 1821 Jefferson Place, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20036. And for email, my regular email is enewman, it's enewman at AmericanHumanist.org. I also use CoreLinks and JPay for those in the incarcerated system who need those.
Thank you. We've been talking tonight with Emily Newman with the American Humanist Association. Emily, is there anything else that you'd like to share?
Thank you for letting me talk about our program here. It is currently our prison work is a small part of our work that is connected to all of our departments. So I, in the education department, am the one who's keeping up with the correspondence, sending out educational materials, and supporting the growing prison chapters. Whenever I have a legal concern, I reach out to our legal department, and they've been excellent at helping us communicate with the facilities and directly communicate with the individuals to understand what support is needed. And as you mentioned about, you know, our growing social justice work, and you know, we would love to do more about justice in the prison system, and that's a whole nother discussion to have. But we do connect with our legislative and social justice team to see, you know, what action alerts we can put out there to face certain legislation, and also, again, provide more materials to individuals upon request. So it really is, you know, a team effort to make sure that those incarcerated are provided the same access and rights to humanism and to the humanist movement as everyone outside.
Great, thank you so much, and have a good evening.
You too.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO.